Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. Message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome again to Booker T. Washington Speaks, African American Family Room Forum. We're happy to rejoin you this evening in our family room, our African American virtual family room, where we come together every week, except on occasion we may skip a week, as we did last weekend, but normally we'll be here every week at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And we want to thank you who have joined us. We certainly are always happy when we have your participation. And tonight's topic is, what is your opinion of the Trump administration's proposal, or threat, depending on how you take it, to bus Latin American asylum seekers to be dropped in sanctuary cities? And this evening, one of the headlines in the TV news dealt with the fact that President Trump is encouraging the sanctuary cities to go ahead and take care of these asylum seekers. Now, I don't understand the logistics of that. I know he says that he plans to bus them to these sanctuary cities. I don't know if he's going to give the people, if this was a real proposal, time to set up accommodations for these asylum seekers. And I don't know if he plans to have Homeland Security work with the city governments to be able to get a count of how many people might be coming, if this thing ever comes to fruition, which I don't know if it's going to actually happen. But if it was to happen, I don't know if he has a real plan to coordinate this make it actually work. I believe it can work. I don't usually voice my opinions at the beginning of the show, but while we're waiting for others to join us, Mr. Bianchi, I see that you've joined us, and I'm looking forward to hearing your opinion, but I just wanted to take a few moments before you come on while we wait to see if anybody else is going to join us so they can hear your opinion and respond to it. So give me just a minute. But welcome to the show, Mr. Piazza. We're always glad when I see your number come up on our dashboard. You know, I have a what we would call a laptop studio, and whenever anybody dials in, I can see the number. It doesn't tell me the name of the person, of course, so I can recognize your phone number, and I know that's you. But welcome to our show tonight.
Well, hello, Mr. Washington. How are you?
Thank you. I'm fine. I'm so glad to see that you joined us tonight. That's one mark of a real gentleman. You didn't assume this because I was not present last weekend, and I wasn't going to be back tonight because I had only said I was going to be missing last weekend. So you took me at my word, and you joined me tonight, and I do really appreciate that. That's very honorable of you. I hope that there are others that join us, though. But let me just say this before I bring you on. The fact is that I personally think that would be a good plan. First of all, it's obvious that since these sanctuary cities, from what I've read, do not want to participate in any activity to help to basically arrest, if you want to use that harsh word, or detain, or whatever it might be called, rounding up and checking these immigrants out to see if they should be allowed to legally seek asylum, since they've decided basically to have a hands-off policy, leave them alone, then if that's the case, it would seem to me that they would also be open to others coming in and finding a way to make provisions for them as they go through the asylum-seeking legal process. And, of course, I would not just let them come in without having them documented so we knew who was in the area, and began the process of some kind of background checks in coordination with the federal officials, state and federal officials. But, you know, take care of them and keep the families together. I think it would like maybe be a great program. Now, one thing I would say is I close my remark is I hear the Democratic governors of these cities taking a position, which is what I call negative feedback. And I don't know if they really thought of the advantages of these people being in their cities under some particular type of program to care for them as opposed to being in detention centers. But
well,
I think, let me finish one thing, Mr. Pierre, before you come on. I think that's just a lot of political rhetoric that really doesn't represent reality that these Democratic leaders, mayors, are spouting. Go ahead, Mr. Pierre. I do want to hear your opinion.
Well, Trump drew out a strong suggestion. You have some of these cities have said that they are sanctuary cities. Immigration is a responsibility of the federal government. It's not the state's responsibility. And states had no business making the claim that illegal immigrants, and like the one governor, I believe it was, a mayor, it might have been a mayor, I think it was a mayor, made statement that her city is open to anybody. Well, that there is ignorance. Immigration, foreign immigrants is a responsibility. The borders is a responsibility of the federal government. And by them making these claims, allowing these illegals to take haven into their city, I think is really preposterous. But they want to take care of these people, feed them, and so on and so on and so on. Then let them put the money up to do that. If you got people, if people that's concerned about the welfare of individuals who can't get into the country, then set up something on the other side of the border to feed them, to house them, and do those things. That shouldn't be the responsibility of the federal government and U.S. taxpayers. I heard someone was complaining, saying that some of these people need mental health. Well, good goddamn, why come they didn't seek that health while they was at home, where they left from? And if they're not in their right mind, why are they leaving? How do they know why they're leaving where they are? Less long, why are they coming to the U.S.? And you talk about children in separation. You have some cases, many cases, where parents in countries in Latin America, South America, sent their children alone or with somebody that's not related. So if someone show up at your door with a child, how do you know that's their child? How do you know that child, that's their parent or relative? You don't know. And if it's not their paternal parent, then they say that I'm a relative. Well, how do you know that the parent okayed for the child to travel with the relative? You couldn't do that if you got on a commercial airline flight. Matter of fact, you as a mother in the United States can't take your child abroad to another country if the father wishes that they do not go. Did you know that?
Yeah, I had heard that.
So, why should there be these special treatments to these illegals trying to enter into the United States. Why should someone be allowed to stay in the country? Why their process of being able to stay in the country is proceeding? That may take years. And then what do they do during that time? How do they survive? They can't work. So maybe they're going to stay in these sanctuary cities where the city can feed them. I don't think that the American taxpayers should be feeding them. We got enough as it is now that needs attention to. Veterans sleeping under bridges and so on, all the things that people used to describe in order to throw shame on the administration. You got children that go to school, the public school, with dirty clothes, haven't had any breakfast, latchkey, can't go home because the parents is working. They have to be tended to until a certain hour after school is closed. Who's going to pay for all this stuff? I thought that Social Security was scheduled to go broke by a certain date. Yet still, you want to bring in illegals and for them benefits that's aligned with Social Security fund. Would that not make it reach its demise faster? Then you got these countries that's getting angry because the president is cutting the foreign aid that the United States gives them yearly in the tune of tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, if you're taking care of it, or you're now all of a sudden presented with an onslaught of citizens coming from these countries where you're giving aid to alleviate problems that caused them supposedly to leave, then why continue to give them money? So that's my partial and whole response to that question.
Okay, well, it's just the two of us. I hope that we'd have others join us, but there's just the two of us. And to be honest with you, I have mixed feelings about this whole immigration issue, and primarily because of something that I learned idealistically when I was a child in grade school, and that was the idea that America had open arms for people that needed to seek refuge from political threats of being in prison, unjustly killed, and also people whose countries were devastated and needed a refuge, at least temporarily, so that he wouldn't die from the devastation, or even if it was like famines, that they could do life in America. And of course, as a child, you know, I was told about Ellis Island, and I was taught, even in the movie The Godfather, you see a picture of all these people lined up, you know, to be admitted into America from these different countries. And I thought personally that that was what America represented for the rest of the world. Let me finish this. Give me a second. It's gotten to the point now where it seems, I could be wrong, but it just seems that our president is saying we'll take people from some countries that may not really be in real trouble, but the people who are living in countries where there's real problems, we don't want them. And that just seems to be a reverse of the idea that I was taught. But let me say this, and I'll be finished, because I'm going to wrap the show up after you say what you're going to say when I finish. But let me just figure this out. But I'm learning, you know, at 75 years old, I've learned a lot about reality versus ideal life, ideal situations. And I was just looking up something quickly. I'll say this. You know, I spent 30 years in the United States military. I spent part of that time in combat zone. And I know what it is to fight and to be under the threat of being killed, being in combat, being in harm's way. And one of the things that I was taught when I went through basic training many, many, many years ago, when I was 18 years old, so it was a long, long time ago, was the Geneva Conventions and the Code of Conduct. And the idea was that even in combat, we weren't going to play playing to our enemy that was inhumane or atrocious. I mean, in other words, if we had to kill the enemy, we weren't going to kill him, you know, one piece at a time. We just going to kill him. We were going to shoot him and not torture him to death or not, you know, shoot off part of his body and then let him bleed and then shoot off another part. That wasn't the American way. But now I've just become aware of the fact that the Army, the Armed Forces, is testing out a laser a gun, I call it a ray gun, that is designed to blind the enemy troops. Well, yeah, obviously it makes sense to do that. I mean, I read about one of the battles in the Bible where the soldiers, I think, on the Israel side, they polished their shields and used the sunlight to blind the enemy. So it's not that this is a new idea, but it's just that this blindness that they're talking about here would be permanent. I don't know about that biblical blindness, whether it was permanent, but the weapons that have been designed are designed intentionally to cause permanent blindness. So here, you know, not only are you disabling a person from fighting to doing the combat, but you're disabling a person from being maybe even able to feed their family after the treaty has been signed. And to me, that's really a horrific idea. So I'm just saying, let me tell you something I want to. I'm just saying that this whole idea that I had as a child, this of America's nobility, is being contested by the facts of reality that I am learning on a daily basis about how things actually work. So it doesn't shock me anymore when I see things happening, like these children, you know, wrapped up in thermal, you know, blankets made out of aluminum foil, you know, and being housed in what's equivalent to cages. I mean, because I can expect anything to be happening in this country. But I do believe in relationship to this topic that it would be better for these people, regardless of where the cities have to get the money from, to be in the cities in some type of housing program and food program than to be in those camps, detention centers. That's all
well,
I have to say.
Who's going to pay for that?
I have no idea. I'm just saying the president's made that suggestion.
Yeah, that's not my responsibility, Mr. Washington.
Yeah, well, you should talk
to
the president.
So if you give him a blanket, then what, you got to have heat and air conditioning for him?
Well, no, I'm just saying that this is a political position that the president, that you helped to elect. I didn't vote for Trump, but you did, and he's the one proposed that, so maybe through the Republican Party apparatus.
No, it's not the Republican Party. You have these cities who said they are sanctuary cities for those to come and stay. They won't assist the federal authorities to go after illegals. So let them go there and let the cities pay for them.
No, it was Trump. It was President Trump that said, he's the one that made a proposal that said he was sending them to these cities.
them city, but the city say they want them.
Well, I don't know. I was listening to several mayors this evening, and they didn't say they wanted these people to be bused to their cities. They just said that they didn't want to participate.
No, a mayor said, and I think it might have been the mayor of San Francisco, she's a female, said that they'd take anybody.
Well, the point is, I'm not going to argue with you. Of course, I, you know, don't agree that these people should be kept in these detention centers, but the point is that, you know, something is getting ready to happen. I don't think the situation is going to remain in the status quo forever with these thousands of people in these camps down there. They got to be moved out of these
camps. Well, they should be taken. Well, you know what should happen? The countries that they came from should send for them. They're their citizens.
Well, yes,
How is it that some of them running and the rest of the people there having a good time?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question because I don't know what the conditions are. But one thing I'll say, it's going to be my closing remark, is that I don't like the idea of these children being in these cages. I don't like this.
Give me an example where you're going to put them.
I'm not really trying to solve that problem. I'm just saying my feeling about the children in cages is very, very against it. That's all I'm saying. But I don't have the idea. I'm not in charge of that department.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you what I think should have been done. They should have, Mexico should have put, you know, here's the first thing. If you leave in Guatemala and you passing through in Panama, you're going to be above Panama, you're going to pass through Costa Rica, why come you didn't stop off at those states?
Well, you know,
those countries.
Obviously
I mean, you ever thought about that?
Well, I know the reason. You know it too. They were trying to get in America.
For what? If they seeking safety, wait a minute, let's go through this a little bit at a time. If they are seeking safety, well, would they not have sought and found safety in Costa Rica, Panama?
Well, President Trump, he said it clearly. I saw him on TV this evening on the news. He said that they was looking forward to going to Disneyland.
Well, they may have. But what I'm saying is this. People say that they're fleeing whatever. Well, when you go to the next country, you know, if I'm fleeing something in Missouri, the nearest state next to me is Illinois. I would go into Illinois. Matter of fact, during 1919, race riot in East St. Louis, blacks came across the bridge into Missouri. They didn't go up to Minnesota. They didn't go up to California. They came to the adjacent state across the bridge into Missouri and sought safety. Dred Scott, he came to Missouri out of Illinois. So those people that's fleeing from whatever, why don't they stop off in Costa Rica? Why don't they stop off in Mexico, which has offered to give them shelter?
Well,
see, you can't blame all this stuff on American citizens and people who's against this when the people themselves are not showing any responsibility themselves.
Well,
no, they
want
to come to the United States because they can get some free loafing. That's why they want to come to the United States. And those laws need to be changed.
Well, again, there's a lot of sides to the issue. There's a lot of facets on the prism, and we can't actually cover everything tonight, but my main point, I'm about to wrap it up, but my main point was I didn't want to get your opinion, and if anybody else has called in, I'd like to have heard their opinion of President Trump's proposal or his threat, depending on how you take it, to bust these people to be dropped in the sanctuary of cities. I've given my opinion. I think it would be a great idea. Rather than being in the detention camps, especially in the case of the children in the cages, and you've given your opinion, but would you really read?
Yeah, but here's the thing: these people are criminals. When you're in another country illegally, you are a criminal. So what type of security do these cities have to make sure that these folks don't get out into the public? You had a case here not too long ago where a guy, I think he had killed five people. He's in the country illegally. And it's not the only case. Reports say you got people that's coming across the border from the Congo. You got people coming across the border from other countries other than the three that we have been accustomed to. You don't know who's in those crowds.
Well, let me just say this one point before I close. If you remember when I gave the topic, I said Latin American asylum seekers. We've had in the U.S. law, in the federal code, for many decades, the terminology asylum seekers. So I'm only talking about those people that are legal asylum seekers in this question. I'm not talking about all the other people.
You know how that's supposed to work? First, you're supposed to seek refugee status into a country, or you come into a country legally. Like, for instance, baseball players. You've had some, Yasir Puig, who played for the Los Angeles Dodgers. He came here to the U.S. and he ended up staying, seeking asylum, and he played for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the person that helped him get to the U.S. was trying to get money out of him. I think you had the same thing with Adrolis Chapman, the pitcher that pitched for Cincinnati Reds. I don't know who he's pitching for now. I think he's pitching for the Yankees. So the thing is that you seek refugee status first. Once you are given refugee status, the right to come into a country under refugee status, then you can apply for asylum. Who in the heck have ever heard for somebody to come into a country and apply for asylum, then you have to wait years until your case is heard, and you're still in the country. And then suppose they find out that you have no legal means for asylum. And then you've had kids. If the reports are right, and I don't make these reports, I just read that these women that's coming into the country, because of the deals they make, sex is involved and they're pregnant. You know what I hear? You heard blacks, and I just got to say it like this. You heard blacks say they want to have their own country. You've heard that before?
Of course, I was in the Nation of Islam. That was one.
All
of
right, let me go on further with that. If you, with the same type of logic that I hear toward this instance of illegals, how would you handle it if you had your own country?
Well,
now remember, there ain't no United States Army or military. It's you.
Well,
how would you handle it? They would come in and overrun your country and probably kick you out.
let me say this. First of all, let me say this. Give me a minute to get it out. I don't think that the idea of several countries existing in the continental North American landscape is absurd because this happened before. Even now, the Indians who are right now, not to confuse the issue, but they're considered wards of the United States government, not by their own choice. They were forced into accepting that status, but they're beginning to reject that status and trying to find a way that they can be recognized as being a sovereign people. And if they really had that way, they'd like to get a lot of their land back so that they could have their own geographical boundaries. So it's not a absurd idea. But back to what you're saying, the whole thing is that, again, I like to stay on the point. I just don't like the idea of these people, regardless of how they came into the country, being left to fester in these camps, especially children. I think that you're right in one area. I agree with you that they should be returned to their countries, but I don't believe it would be right if we knew that these, so many people are going to be mowed down by oppressive regimes by coming back for us to send them back to the situation. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying if
you
we
know,
knew that.
You know, the people leaving from the country outnumber the Dagnon military. And if the military is going to kill them, why come they not killing the people that's there, that stayed there, that's living a nice life?
Yeah.
And you can see them on YouTube. Why come they not killing them?
Yeah, well, I don't have the answer to those questions. I'm not really trying to solve that. I just want
Well, then the questions I would like somebody to answer. I hear people come up with something that they hear on the news and want to argue them facts, but I really get putting in logic to the whole thing. So, and people say they kept in cages. Well, where would you want to put them up in the Hilton? Wherever they are kept at right now, it's costing somewhere between $500 and $800 a day per child.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't want to see that continue. But let me do this, Judy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe she didn't want to mention her name, but she has announced her name on here numerous times. So if there is someone named Judy that has just joined in the last few minutes, if you want to speak and identify yourself as the Judy, that's fine. If there's someone who wants to come on and remain anonymous, the floor is open at this time. So, Mr. Bianca, let's give any callers that just joined us an opportunity to respond to the question, and then we can get back on that point. The question for our callers that may have just joined us is, what is your opinion of the Trump administration's proposal or threat to bus Latin American asylum seekers to be dropped in sanctuary cities? You may or may not be familiar with what the term sanctuary cities means, and if you would like for me to explain it, I'd be happy to do so, but I'm not going to unless you ask me to. So whoever would like to speak right now, the floor is open. What is your opinion?
Well, good evening. How are you?
Good evening.
Yes, I'm just tuning in. I only heard the last couple of comments and did not hear the question. I heard what you just mentioned, but I'm not sure that I'm very clear on the question. However, I would like for you to give a definition of sanctuary cities so that I can have a better understanding of the question.
Okay, to the best of my understanding, I'm only getting what I've heard on the news. Sanctuary cities are cities that basically have made it their policy not to conform to the federal government's requirement to use their police powers and other social services agencies to identify illegal aliens within the confines of their city so they can be turned up to the ICE, the Immigration Enforcement Authority, so they can be dealt with legally, whether it's deportation, detention, or whatever they do. But the sanctuary cities are cities where the law enforcement and other agencies are not actually reporting these people, even if they're known through the agencies. They're not reporting these people. They're allowed basically to live in those cities as though they were legally supposed to be there. That's my understanding. If you would like, Ms. Bianca's online. He may want to add something to that. Do you have any more information on the sanctuary city, Ms. Bianca?
You got some liberal cities, democratically ran, that's in opposition of this present administration as it pursues, as the federal law states, illegals who have entered into the country. The border is the responsibility of the federal government. Cities like Chicago, San Francisco have taken on these positions. So Trump said, well, if you want to have that position, then we would bring more of these illegals and undocumented people to you and let you take care of them. Why should that
right.
be Americans' responsibility?
Well, we just
let
want
them
to get... Sorry, I'm going to cut you off. Go ahead. I don't want to be rude.
No, that's it.
Well, I just want to make sure that I call her. She hadn't identified herself, so I won't call her out. But I just want to make sure I call her had a clear definition of what a sanctuary city was. Did you get a pretty clear picture of what a sanctuary city is?
Right, that I understand now, and I really was about to ask an example, but he said San Francisco was an example of one. So, yeah. Well, I don't know. I think that I would have to. I really don't know enough about this topic, to be honest. I'm not sure enough. I will listen and continue to listen, and may add some more comments, but I haven't put any real thought to it. As I listen to the comments, perhaps then I'll have more to say about what I really feel about it. But at this moment,
okay.
I'll continue to listen.
Okay, we're not going to talk much longer, actually, because we've been talking about this on this topic, just Ms. Pionk and myself, for over half an hour, and pretty much
okay.
have exhausted our opinions. But
exhausted
I will read. No, but
hell, San Francisco's got a problem with cleaning human feces up off the streets to the
yeah.
tune of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Well, what is the reason? My question really quickly, just to interrupt quickly, what is the reason these cities are, I mean, is there some consensus of position of sort as to why, or is this just a terminology that Trump uses for those cities, or is that a technical a definite definition of these particular type cities, and what's the rationale? Is there a rationale these cities fit into one category by certain criteria? I'm walking while I'm talking. Sorry. So those would be the questions. I'm not really clear as to how they become sanctuary cities. Is this just a term, a slang for these cities, or what?
It's a liberal attempt to take in these illegals. Next thing you know, they'll be citizens. Next thing you know, well, not citizens. They want them to be able to drive, want them to be able to work, want them to be able to vote. That's it in a nutshell.
As you may know this, but I'll just kind of go over it. During the Middle Ages in Europe, we're talking about back in the 1400s, 1500s, and even prior to that, when you had these land barons fighting each other, if some knight or some baron from one of these estates felt that he was getting ready to be captured and tortured, he could go into a monastery, church, and according to the traditions of that time, they couldn't come in there and get him and arrest him, so he would be able to find what was called sanctuary. Sanctuary, of course, as we probably know, in a church is a sacred area of the church. And so it was considered to be against church law to violate the sanctuary, the holiness of the church, by invading the church to capture someone that was a political, what we would say, a political escapee or somebody who was trying to get away from being captured for political reasons. And maybe to some extent even misdemeanors. So these sanctuary cities are kind of analogous to that situation in the church where these people could find safety and did not have to fear having the police invade their homes and throw them in jail while they were in America, supposedly seeking to be able to live here legally. But in any event, the police, even though if they knew that they were even operating a little store on the corner, and that they were not legal, they wouldn't break in and arrest them in these sanctuary cities.
Well, let me ask you a question. Blacks wasn't allowed sanctuary when they went into other states. They had fugitive slave laws after bringing blacks back. So if you blacks, no matter where they went, if they was a runaway fugitive, then authorities was made to lock them up and take them back to where they came from. You had a movie called 12 Years a Slave that addressed that situation. So now all of a sudden we're going to say that these illegals that come into the country, you don't know where they're coming from, what their background is, such, 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 and such. Now they are afforded to be protected? This is the thing that gets me. I don't understand this. I mean, it's very confusing. We're always talking about history, but we seem to leave that in some corner. And now all of a sudden, these illegals coming across the southern border, they supposed to be afforded those privileges and rights that black slaves were not afforded.
Well, does somebody else want to respond? I'll give you a quick response. Does somebody else want to respond? Okay, well, I will give you a quick response. You know, one thing that you're going to probably remember if you look back over the last 2.5 years we've been doing the show is that I tried personally to stay on the point of the topic that I have chosen because I would spend a little time, I won't say days and days and weeks, but I spent some time before the show researching to get some background on the issue that I want to have the discussion about. And so once that I've invested my time in that, I want to talk about that particular topic and not stray off into a whole lot of other topics. But I have said, and I'll reiterate it, that if the people that are the members of the family room, audience, and forum want to talk about something else, that's fine with me. We can shift gears and talk about something else. But as for me personally, I like to stay on the topic that I actually have announced because some people may be tuning in because they want to talk about or hear about that topic. Now,
Mr. Washington, we've already addressed that.
Well,
the rule says on a national, on an international level, is that a person that's seeking to leave their country for whatever reason supposed to go to the adjacent country and ask permission to seek refuge there. And once there, then they can seek asylum. That's what the rules say.
Okay, well, let me just mention this because we only had one other caller and they just dropped off and we've covered this now between me and you, so we don't need to cover
it. I tell you
again.
What, I'll give you a copy, you can find the rules on seeking refuge in fine law. It tells you the process that's supposed to be done.
Yes. Listen, I'm not in disagreement with you about any of that. The only thing I had actually wanted to get opinions on, I gave mine, you gave yours, and the other person said they wasn't well enough first to give an opinion, and they're gone now. But the only thing I had really wanted, I came right back, I'm sorry. The only thing I had really wanted to get my opinion out was the question about the proposal to bust them to the sanctuary cities. In my opinion, I'll reiterate for the callers that just came back on, is I think it's a great idea to take them out of the detention camps and bust them to the sanctuary cities. That's my opinion.
Where are they going to be kept at in the cities?
Well, I'm not in the city management department to be able to figure out the logistics of it. I'm just giving a blanket opinion without having thought it through. I mean, it's just something just came up today when I heard about the proposal, so I haven't had any time to look at the logistical things and come up with a research plan.
Well, the point I was going to make is if these are sanctuary cities, based on what I'm thinking that I'm comprehending are what we designate as our call a sanctuary city, then if the cities are if they are taking in these illegal aliens or whatever, obviously they've made some kind of preparation or they have a reason why they're going to allow them and are making some, you know, accommodations available or some rules and laws within those cities as to how they're going to deal with them. And the other thing you said, if they're going to eventually become citizens and voting and all of that, they have to meet certain criteria. So obviously they are qualified. It may have to go through a longer process because they are illegal. But you said these people will eventually become voters and, you know, all of the different things you listed that they will become. Well, they can't become that unless they're qualified to become that or they meet the requirements. So what's the problem with that?
The problem is this. People, you're, according to the rules, you're supposed to seek a refugee status outside of a country. All right, let's say you get in the United States and you seek refugee status. It may take years before your case is heard in court. In the meantime, you go out and have babies. Those babies are United States citizens.
Yeah.
When your case comes up and it's found out that you do not qualify for being a refugee, then you got to go. Then the first thing people are going to say, well, you sending the parent away, but the child has to stay here because it's a citizen. Now you separating parents from citizens and children from parents. That's why it's wrong. Every rule say when you, and here's another point. If you're in Honduras, and you as a Honduran citizen is having whatever problems you have that you need to leave the country, well, you're supposed to seek refugee in the adjacent country, not 1,400 miles away to the United States border. You seek refugee status in the adjacent country if you're fleeing whatever. So why is it that these people go through all these countries to come to the United States? So that is the big, there's the concern. And those, you know, Americans, people that get engaged in these conversations need to understand what it is that they're talking about. Another point, these countries that they call them the three northern triangles, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala. They belong to the Organization of American States, which consists of 28 countries. Well, you doing something. Washington, I'll see you later.
Okay, Mr. Bianchi. Thank you for coming tonight. Well, Mr. Bianchi has left, but Stephanie has joined us. Hi, Stephanie.
Assalamu alaikum. Hello, my brother. Hold on, I'm going to another room.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Stephanie.
Thank you. Wa alaikum assalam.
Stephanie, do you need me to read to you what the topic is tonight?
Thank you. Yes, please.
Okay, here's the topic. What is your opinion of the Trump administration's proposal or threat to bus Latin American asylum seekers to be dropped in sanctuary cities? Do you need for me to explain what the term sanctuary cities means?
Yes, because I understand they wanted to make California a sanctuary city. So please explain.
Yeah, okay. According to what I've learned through watching the news and some reading I've done, a sanctuary city is a city that has made it its official policy not to go after these people, mostly the Mexican or Latin American immigrants who may be illegal, to have them arrested, detained, so that the immigration, the federal immigration authorities can do whatever they do with them, whether it's them or put them in jail or detention centers or whatever they do to these people if they are not supposed to be in the country. And the sanctuary cities, they're not using their social welfare department information or their police to try to locate and round up or identify these people. They're just letting them exist within the city just like they belong there legally. That's what a sanctuary city is. So in other words, to just quickly elaborate, if I was an illegal from Guatemala, which is where a lot of these people that are down at the border right now are supposedly coming from, and let's say that I'm just saying, I'd have to look on the map. This is a map that has the sanctuary cities, but this Pinky was gone. He said that San Francisco is one of them, so I just use that. Now, if I was a Guatemalan and I lived in San Francisco, it's a pretty big city. It's easy to get lost, you know, in San Francisco if you want to just stay underground. But these people don't even have to stay underground. They could be in San Francisco running a business, and the health department or the official inspects the restaurant. They could know that the person there, the police on the beat could know that the person there, the people in other social welfare agencies could know that they're there. But the policy is that they will not report these people to the federal immigration people, knowing that the federal immigration people probably arrest these people and put them in a detention center. So they, in those cities like San Francisco, those people can feel safe, you know, generally speaking. So if I was a Guatemalan wanting to reside illegally in the United States, San Francisco would be one of the places I would go to be able to live, because there wouldn't be a whole lot of threat that I would get deported or get arrested. So that's a quick version of what a sanctuary city is. And so the question, Stephanie, is what is your opinion of the Trump administration proposal to bus Latin American asylum seekers to be dropped in sanctuary cities? He's saying that if the sanctuary cities feel the way they do about the situation, that these people down at the border just be put on buses and dropped off in the sanctuary cities. And my opinion was, yeah, that sounds good to me. At least they wouldn't detention stages. We have a sound, a beep, beep, beep sound. I don't know where it's coming from. But anyway,
I apologize. I'm getting in the car. Forgive me. I'm putting you back on mute.
That's okay. But go ahead. You were going to say something, Stephanie?
Yes. This is one of the reasons why I love you so much, my brother. You have a big heart, a godly heart. I feel the same way. Now, see, most of our cities in California are Spanish-named cities. And we know why that is, because they've been here. They've been here longer than us. People, we have a right to live in God's country. You know, there was a record a long time ago. This is God's country. I don't remember who it was by, but human beings need to have a heart towards one another, and we need to work with one another. Mexico is our neighbor, and I've always lived around Mexican people. I love them. I am not Mexican or a Native American descent, but I love people of all nationalities. And I think there's room for all of us to work together towards a common goal. So, yes, I'm all for a sanctuary city. I believe in people having a right to a decent life, children, elder people, hardworking people, and I'm all for it. Yes, I am.
Well, I actually hope that they will work with these cities so the cities have a plan to house these people and feed these people and maybe find some work for these people so they just don't be sitting around like they're doing now, just festering from day to day.
Right.
And even give these little kids while they're seeking asylum. That's my personal opinion.
They want the Mexicans over here because they don't mind working, especially working them fields, growing those crops.
Well, it seems like
the average American refuses to do. But we love to reap the rewards of it.
It seems like the president go ahead.
No, no, I'm sorry. I was just going to add to that. I feel the same way, you know, having the humanity of people and, you know, sheltering and welcoming the people. Obviously, if these are, again, I'm not completely sure how these cities have designated themselves, all the details and particulars about how they designated themselves as sanctuary cities. However, but I feel that they have obviously, they see a plan and they see a way that these people can be useful to the community and to the betterment of the community, or, you know, they would be opposed to being a sanctuary city. They are, you know, offering some sanctuary, you know, a space and solace and a place of refuge for these human beings. But I think they also see the potential and they can see a plan in, you know, allowing them to stay. There's a plan and there's a way that it can be a win-win and everybody can, they can find work and help with urban development,
that's right,
and whatever they're doing. There's a purpose, you know.
Well, let me just interject. The subdivision in which we live, our family lives, was all built by Mexicans. Every single one of the over 120 homes. And these are nice houses.
Oh.
Quality of work that these Mexicans do. I actually, as a young man, was trained in electricity. But part of what we actually studied was house wiring in the trade school. And one of the things I wanted to make sure of, since I had training, was that our home was wired safely, because that's one of the pages of home fires is the wiring. And so I came out when they got to the stage where they were putting the wiring in, but I was out here even before. And every wiring job that they did, and I didn't go up in the attic to the extent. Well, I was up there because there really was no reason why I couldn't get up there because everything was open. But I took a flashlight. I'd come out in the evening with a big gigantic flashlight, and I would expect wiring. And those messengers did a great job. They did a great job. Whatever they did a great job, okay? And I don't know if they were legal or not, but I wasn't worried about that. I was just worried about the quality of their work. And I think that's the thing. I think that these people that run these cities realize these folks are making a big contribution, building beautiful, good, safe homes.
Yep.
And not charging. Do you know, I believe that if they had used labor union, I'm not saying these people didn't have a labor union, but if they use standard American regular wage that they normally would pay the white people, I'll say it like that, not that they all have to be white, to build this house, it would cost at least $60,000 more than what it did cost, just because of the differential in what they would have to pay for labor. because we know that these Mexicans are brought in here to work for minimum wage. And for them, the minimum wage is not $10. It's the minimum wage that the Labor Department says you had to pay, which I think is $8.50 or something. And you know most of these people that do building, white folks, they're not going to work for any less than $50 an hour. So you can see the difference in what it would cost in terms of labor to build a house if you use those other folks as opposed to the Mexicans. So most people realize it's a great value in having these people here, and they don't mind working for those wages because they're probably making three times as much as they would be making down in Mexico and probably living better too. And they're looking forward to maybe rising up so that they can get higher wages at some point. You know, I did a study. I'm not trying to talk too much, but I was working on I was taking a class. I won't say all what I was doing, but I was taking a class, and I had to do a study of Mexican workers. And it's a business course. And some of these Mexicans evolve to where they become managers, white-collar workers. They come over here, maybe as children or young people. They might start off working in the fruit orchards or in the different fields, you know, agricultural production fields. Eventually might get a job with that agricultural company, being a supervisor, foreman, and maybe even a manager. They have dreams like we have of going up in the society, and they're working towards that, but they don't mind starting off at the bottom is what I'm saying. So a lot of these people that run these sanctuary centers, they see great value in making it possible for these people to come over here and live. And I'm sure they don't want the criminal element, and I'm sure that if once police identify that maybe one or two or three of these people on the city block is there for criminal purposes, they will arrest them. But they won't go around looking for people just because they don't have their papers to arrest them. My point.
Right. They won't be racially profiling them, hopefully. Hopefully not. But I was going to also add the comment earlier about, you know, I would say that Mexico, California, these people are just reclaiming Mexico, you know, Mexico. This is their land, and a lot of the land is theirs anyway, you know. So it's really ridiculous if we go back to the history book and really look at some of the, you know, migrations and oppressive, you know, captivations and whatever you would call it, you would, you know, find now these people are being criminalized in manners. I'm happy these sanctuary cities are seeing something positive, you know, and I think I'm going to say the same thing I've already said, but I think it's a good thing. And I think Mexicans, if here in Atlanta, and I'm sure lots of cities, I consider them to be upwardly mobile. I mean, they are very ambitious, and many of them, you know, we have neighbors that live right next door to us. You know, they're doing a great job of assimilating right into the, you know, American society, and they want to be citizens and they want to follow the law and rules. I think those are the kind of things that we want citizens to desire, and those are the same thing immigrants from all these other European countries do. They come here, so I'm happy about this sanctuary city.
I just want to, but I don't want to overtalk Stephanie. Did you want to on that point, Stephanie?
I agree with her, and you also 100%. It's a humanitarian thing, and I think it's wonderful. I think more cultures need to come together and stand for each other and building America and upright, and instead of all the hatred and things like that. You know, there's no room for that type of stuff on this earth. So,
and also,
I'm
sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add, let me step out because I'm in the business. Thank you. I was going to say, I just wanted to add that, you know, we all can see with our eyes, all nationalities, we can see that it's the biggest block to people coming in has been those immigrants of color. You know, those are the ones that everybody has. As far as just racism,
yeah.
You know, there's never been any kind of big, you know, putting up walls and blocking people. All these immigrants and all these people that make up our country, America, are descendants of immigrants. And their families never, if their families had been treated the way the Mexicans and Cubans and Haitians, you know, it's just terrible. It's a terrible, you know, travesty. And that's all I wanted to add.
Well,
let me just enter
my two cents worth on the whole point of something that you had mentioned, Stephanie, about the prior original inhabitants. Geologists, at least in Central America, but I believe if they do enough digging and reveal their findings, they'll find that it's also true in North America, especially around the Gulf of Mexico, Texas, you know, and that area around the Gulf of Mexico, that the original inhabitants weren't the red people, they were black people. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Now, where they came from, they're still not sure. They might have come from Africa, or they might have just appeared here. You know, humanity might have had a single source from which everybody pushed out in different directions, or the same seed, what I would say that was dropped in Africa could have been dropped throughout the rest of the earth, and these dark people called black people, if you want to, Negro type of people could have sprung up simultaneously or within several thousands of years of each other all over the world instead of starting what they don't know. This is all, but they have found, the more they dig, the more they find evidence, no matter where it is in the world, of black skinned people. Okay, now they may or may not have come out of Africa. They may have just come from wherever they're found and just been black-skinned people. But the point of it is that the Indians who became Mexicans, the only reason why that they are called Mexicans is because they're mixed. Mexican comes from the word mestizo, which means mixed. But those Indians, like Peruvians, they don't call them Mexicans. They are Peruvians. Those are another kind of Indians. It's not as mixed as the people in Mexico. Who was the Mexicans mixed with? They already were Indians. So naturally they were mixed with each other. But they started being mixed up with the Spanish, because the Spanish, when they came over here, at first they didn't bring their women. And so they took advantage of the Mexican girls to be able to cohabitate with the Mexican girls, and that's proceeded to cause the people to be mixed. But at first, those Indians did not speak Spanish. They spoke languages like Quechua or some other version of Indian languages. So all over America and South America, Central America, you had these Mexicans. But they weren't Mexican, they were just Indians, and they spoke their own native languages. What these people wanted to do is get their land back from these European people that came and killed them and took their land.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want to do. Now, here's the question. The other caller, she never did announce herself, so I'm not going to mention her name, but we know who she was, us who know her. But the fact of it is that let's say that they find that they were black people here even before these red people or brown people. So should the black people feel that the black people should take the land back and get rid of everybody else? That doesn't make a lot of sense.
No.
I mean, it wouldn't make any sense that we find out that they dug and they find out that we're the people, black people. The black people said, well, the Mexicans need to get out of here, too, because they was invaders on our property. So if we're going to say that, we should not kick out the Mexicans. If we found that the black people were here first, we should kick out the white people. So So then the question is, well, how does somebody get to have the title over the land? Well, historically, the way they got to have the title over the land is one of two ways. Either they bought it or they stole it. Now, they may have stole it through wars, or they may have stole it through unfair treaties. That's how they got most of the land in the east part of the United States, is through unfair treaties, contracts that they didn't keep their bargain. Or they may have stole it by fighting and killing the people and taking the land. They did that a lot. Very seldom did they actually do any legitimate purchases of the land. But all over the world, people have been doing that. So I guess my point, and we're going to close in a minute, my point is that we can't turn back history. We can't turn back the clock. I don't see in the next 200 or 300 years that the Europeans are going to give up this paradise that they have built, all of the beautiful places like Disney World and Mar-a-Lago and all of the beautiful, beautiful other types of estates that they have that are treasures in the earth that they have built to go back to Europe. This is their Europe. This is their heaven. And they are not going to give it up if they can help it. And I don't see anything going to force them to give it up. Now, as far as them being able to keep the other people from coming in here, that's a political issue. And that's the reason why that those people, the Mexicans, the black people, and anybody that feels that they should have a more open-door policy needs to go to the polls in 2020 and vote for politicians that are going to support more open borders. That's my final word on that.
Amen. Thank you.
Well, I'm sure glad you joined us tonight. I was hoping that you would find the opportunity to join us, and I appreciate you taking the time from your schedule and joining us, Stephanie, and I hope that everything's going well back on that, what I would say, new part of God's green earth that y'all decided to come in. And again, we always appreciate your participation in the African American Family Room conversations. We say Family Room Forum, which means conversation. So we're going to wrap it up now. We're going to close out. Did you want to make any further last comments?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I would just like to say thank you, Heavenly Father, for this day and every day. Thank you for being our God. And thank you for answering our prayers. Thank you for bringing us all together with love. Thank you that we want to look out for each other. And let's continue to try and be whole people of all nationalities and stand united as one. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you.
Wa alaikum. Thank you so much for that prayer. Okay, to all who've been listening via the internet, we're going to close our program now. And as we always do, we close out with the Black National Anthem.